Chapter 21. Virginia. Petard. For an hour, the enemy's armada circles around Mars's equator like a shiver of sharks. They travel just beyond the no-man's land that exists between the OBC and the maximum effective range of its guns. Holding their positions on the poles, Victor's and Niobe's groups shadow the tightly packed enemy, waiting for them to make their move. Missiles flit between the lines, but with the anti-missile systems of both forces deployed, few find their mark. In the second hour, Diomedes' battle group begins to flirt with our outer perimeter. They test for weaknesses and get a bloody nose from our long guns. It's a familiar game. They try to tease out as much information on the OBC's strength as they can, and we try to withhold while still getting a few licks in. Then thousands of blues of each navy analyze the skirmishes and pass their findings up the chain. Pixel by pixel, commanders from both sides form a clearer picture of the strength of their opponents. Very conservative, very Helios au lux. By the fourth hour, the anxiety of waiting for the enemy to attack in earnest has begun to wear on my commanders, but we cannot lose if we maintain discipline, so I'm on the horn constantly with all of them. The only change in the enemy's pattern of feint and withdrawal occurs by accident, when Lysander takes his turn testing our perimeter. One of his destroyers loses its shield under the converging fire of three battle stations and barely limps out of range to safety. His battle group falls behind the others.
"Those are escape pods," Bora says. "They're abandoning ship."
There's laughter around the nucleus, but not from Kavix.
"A veteran would know. Fresh off the assembly line, there's always a few lemons,"
he murmurs.
"Least he's decent enough to pick them up."
True enough, just beyond the effective range of our guns, the Lightbringer comes to a halt to recover the escape pods.
"I could pounce on him and kill him," Victor suggests. "That's bait," I say. "Hold your position. Continue shadowing the main fleet. If a mistake is to be made, let it be them who makes it."
"Yes, my sovereign, but I'm growing roots up here."
Kavak still stares at the Lightbringer. Something feels off.
"Aura, how long until Phobos and Lysander are directly aligned?" I ask.
He frowns.
31 minutes.
I tell Char to be ready just in case Lysander does something foolhardy.
Aura was skeptical. "You think Loon would risk a frontal assault on Phobos while we have triple fleet coverage?"
Victra practically licks her lips.
"Let's hope he's that fool."
Her sudden change in tone chills me to the bone.
"Sensors, what is that?"
A pause.
I see it on my crown's holo projection. A large mass inbound at high velocity toward the pole.
"Evasive action!"
Her signal cuts out. Sensors scream.
A hail of unidentified objects moving too fast to be ships or missiles streaks toward the North Pole.
The objects are dark, massive, and too big to be rail slugs. Yet they are. I know they are before the Blues can even analyze the object.
No student in any Astral Academy could ever be faulted if, when given an exam to create a hypothetical defense of Mars, they placed their strongest fleet on the North Pole. A fleet on the North Pole is a trump card. That is, unless the enemy circled your planet, noted your fleet's velocity as you shadowed them over the course of 5 hours, and adjusted their own velocity over time to lead your fleet right into the path of rail slugs that were fired a week ago from the largest railgun installation ever built.
A railgun installation that was scuttled before it was lost to the enemy, and which many great minds promised me neither the core nor the rim had the technology to restore. I watch in cold fury. The rail slugs would have to have been fired days ago, so they cannot target individual craft. It hardly matters. Rail slugs as large as corvettes but made of solid durosteel scream in at 6 times the speed of our fastest warship and detonate to send shrapnel into Victor's fleet over the North Pole.
Slugs skip off the planetary shields with the force of thermonuclear bombs and plough through battle stations like tungsten marbles into papier-mâché machete models. The slugs don't come in flights, but in a steady, wide stream. We didn't design the guns to fire like that, like fire hoses. Kavax is awestruck.
They didn't just fix the guns. They made a bigger clip, he murmurs.
The stream of fire abates. The rail slugs took only 4 seconds to pass over the planet. The Blues tabulate the amount of metal that just passed over Mars and on into space faster than they can our casualties. They say the number. I blanch. It equates to 10 months of Mercury's iron exports. Where did they get that much metal? I have a guess. Lysander must have used some of the bones of the White Fleet to repair the Lightbringer. I think I know what just happened to the rest. They shot us with our own detritus. At least there will be no second shot. It's just too expensive. In the wake of the attack, the nucleus is stunned. Not simply by the damage reports, but the mathematics involved in such a shot. They would dwarf the complexity of those used when we fired relief pods with our guns to my husband on Mercury. We feel inferior. Yet, as my Blues search the debris floating over the North Pole, they find a stirring sight. A ship signature, Victress. She hisses over the comms.
Those bastards! Form on me! Anyone still alive? Form on the Pandemonia!
Victress' ship is damaged, but she is alive. Not just her, at least half her fleet seem to have survived the barrage. But they'll have no time to recover, because the enemy armada has finally decided to attack. They angle not for the planet, but toward the North Pole. I go still. They have no intention of launching an iron rain today. Today they came to kill Victra and eliminate the best ships of our fleet.
Niobe, Char, this is a decapitation mission. They're going for Victra and Task Force Spear. Marshal on her. It'll be a knife fight on the pole. We cannot lose the fleet. Defend it at all costs.
They copy and their fleets race from Phobos and the South Pole to help as the battle stations open fire on the onrushing enemy. The firefight glows like a second sun. I let the battle station commanders do their jobs and stare at the Lightbringer. Each minute, Phobos's orbit brings us closer to alignment with Lysander.
Not a lemon after all, Kavik says.
No. He frowns at the debris over the pole.
Alas, hoisted by our own...
I turn on him with such cold fury that Sophocles growls at me from his arms. Kavik feeds Sophocles a jelly bean as if he hadn't just been hit in the teeth.
Calm down, he says,
and eyes the dazed members of the Nucleus's staff. He's right.
We knew this would not be bloodless, I shout. Now it's our turn to draw theirs.
A faint cheer, and they return to their jobs. Oro rushes to my side.
My sovereign, without fleet coverage, Phobos will be vulnerable to attack.
Then it's a good thing we have shields, guns, ripwings, and missiles, Kavik says. If Loon's got the balls, let him try his luck.
Sink to your guns, Aura, I say. I'll prep the legions. He rushes to his gun command station and dons his neural link circlet. He shivers and his eyes roll back. Aura can literally feel the giant anti-ship guns of Phobos moving in the gloom to train their gaze on Loon's fleet.
My sovereign, does Loon know you're on Phobos?
Holiday asks. He's a smart boy, I say, and since our intelligence is apparently for shit, I'm guessing the twins of South Pacifica aren't the only weapons the enemy's stolen from us that is now battle-ready.
Time to alignment with the Lightbringer, I ask.
19 minutes,
a blue calls. The enemy fleet is suffering heavy losses to our battle stations, but they're almost to the dead zone their artillery carved into our defences over the North Pole. In that debris, Victra will be gathering her ships for the fight of her life. I roll up my shoulders, ready for the fight of mine.